Bud Not Buddy, Chapter 18. We got in two cars to drive for an hour and a half north of Grand Rapids. We were headed to a dinky town called Macosta. I got to ride with the band while Mr. Jimmy and Herman E. Calloway and the instruments were riding in the Packard. Miss Thomas stayed back at Grand Calloway Station. I'd been living with Miss Thomas and the band for about 7 days, and this was already my third trip on the road. The band was doing their next favorite thing to playing music. They were teasing each other and talking about Herman E. Calloway behind his back. The thug said to Dirty Deed, "I'd be offended, man, and I ain't trying to say that you ain't good on the 88s, but you know the only reason you got this gig is because you're Dutch, you're white, and you don't have the strongest personality in the world." Deed said, "Yeah, well, such is life. You think I'm going to give up the best gig in the state just because you'd be offended? Take a look out the window, baby. There's a depression going on. How many folks you see living like us, Negro or white? Not many. That man may have his faults, but he's a struggler. I'm putting my hat in with him." Eddie looked at me and said, "Bud, Mr. C has always got a white fella in the band for practical reasons, but we don't hold his skin color against him. He can't help that he was born that way." Deed said, "You are just too kind, Edward." Eddie kept talking. "We do that 'cause the boy can play. Mr. C won't compromise on his music." I said, "Why does he always keep one white guy in the band?" Deed said, "It's the way of the world, Sleepy. It's against the law for a Negro to own any property out where the log cabin is, so Mr. C put it in my name." Eddie said, "That, and a lot of times we get gigs playing polkas and waltzes, and a lot of these white folks wouldn't hire us if they knew we were a Negro band, so Deed goes out and sets up everything." "But what do they say when Dusky Devastators show up?" Deed said, "Well, it's too late for them to say anything then. It's us or no music." Eddie said, "And Mr. C tells them if we aren't the best band they'd ever had, then they don't have to pay. We haven't been stiffed yet." With all the arguing and jokes about Mr. C, the trip seemed real short. We unloaded all of the instruments and waited for nighttime to come. I'd heard the band play and practice a thousand times and still had to sit about on my hands when they were finished so I wouldn't bust out clapping. We finished our set at a little place called Laughing Jackass, and I got to sleep right on stage to guard the instruments. The next morning, I was packing everything into the cases when I got some real bad news. Miss Herman E. Calloway told Mr. Jimmy, "I'ma stay and catch up with Eugene. You head back with the boys." The man who owned the club, Mr. Eugene Miller, used to be in one of Mr. C's bands. Mr. Jimmy said, "Bud, take your time loading everything into the Packard and you can ride back with Herman." Uh-oh. Me and Mr. C looked at each other like this wasn't a good idea. He said, "Whatever," and walked back to the club's office. Shucks, a whole hour and a half, trapped in a car with him. I loaded all of the instruments into the Packard, sat on a big rock, and took out my recorder to practice. I could hear Mr. C and Mr. Miller talking and laughing for the longest time. At last, Herman E. Calloway came out and walked over to the side of the building and started nudging things around with the toe of his shoe. I walked over to watch what he was doing. When I got next to him, I could see that it was just rocks he was pushing around. Finally, he grunted a couple of times and started to bend over, but his big belly got in the way and wouldn't let his arms reach out to the ground. After a bunch more grunts, he said, "Make yourself useful, boy. Hand me this one." "This what, sir?" "This stone. This one." Right at the end of Mr. C's shiny brown shoe was a little roundish rock. I bent over to pick it up, blew some dirt off of it, and turned it over a couple of times in my hands to try and see why Mr. C thought it was so special. The only thing I could tell was that he'd picked a perfect throwing rock, the exact same kind of rock I'd use if I was about to chunk someone in the head. I dropped it in his hand. He didn't look at it or anything, or nothing. He just stuck it in his pocket, and I heard it bang up against some silver dollars. I kept my nose out of his business for as long as I could, then had to say, "Mr. C, wasn't that just a rock?" "Sure was." He started walking back to the Packard. I followed. There was a million ways to ask what I wanted to know, and I chose the worst one when I said, "What in Sam Hill are you going to do with a doggone rock?" It sounded a lot meaner than I wanted it to, but I was really surprised that Mr. C would want an old rock. He climbed in on one side of the Packard, and I climbed in on the other. After he stuck the key in the dashboard, he said, "Bad habit." Then he leaned over toward me and opened the glove box of the car. There weren't any gloves or maps or papers in the box, just a bunch of perfect throwing rocks. They all looked like they had writing on them. I reached in and took one of the rocks out, and written on the back, it was Idlewood M5236. I took another one and it said Preston, Indiana 6436. These were just like my rocks. I took one more and it said Chicago, Illinois 31932. I looked over to Mr. C and said, "I've got some of these, sir." He said, "Really, I've got some too." He looked at me, shifted his pipe away from the talking side of his mouth and said, "Bud, I know you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but those are found all over the world. In fact, they're about as common as rocks." I almost didn't answer him, but since I didn't want to look so stupid, I said, "Yes, sir, but mine have writing and numbers on them too." He said, We kept driving. Finally, I said to him, "You don't believe me. I'll show you." I dropped his three rocks back into the glove box and closed it, then climbed over the front seat to get at my Saks case. I found it and set it on the back seat and unlocked it. As soon as I opened the top, that smell of old spit and crumbling up velvet and mildew came rushing out. It was still great. I lifted the little door that covered my rocks and took two of them out. I climbed back over the front seat, but kept the rocks covered in my hand. If he was going to see these, he was going to have to ask first. I crossed my arms across my chest and waited. It's a good thing I've got lots of patience, because I waited a long, long time. When we finally got back to Grand Calloway Station, Mr. Jimmy helped us unload the car. Finally, I decided that Mr. C had waited long enough. I stuck my rocks in his face and said, "See, I told you I had some rocks like those. The only difference is mine say Flint M.8.11.11 and Gary.6.13.12. He said, "Where did you find these? Didn't I tell you not to do any rummaging around in that room you've been sleeping in?" He reached for the rocks. I don't know why, but I let him take them. He was the first person other than Bugs that I ever let touch the rocks that my mama had given to me. Mr. C turned the rocks over and over in his hands, said, "Well, where'd you get these?" Uh-oh. I could tell by the way Herman E. Calloway was holding my rocks that he didn't plan on giving them back to me anytime soon. I kept watching his hand, waiting for a chance to snatch my rocks and get out of there. If I could get my hands back on my rocks, I knew I could outrun Mr. C, even though he was a lot stronger and his legs were a lot longer than mine. Herman E. Calloway said, "Answer me, where did you take these from?" Mr. C sounded meaner than he ever had before. Mr. Jimmy heard him and put down the box he was carrying and walked over to us real quick. Herman E. Calloway had the rocks squeezed tight in his right-hand fist and had his left-hand fist balled up like he was ready to fight. Mr. Jimmy said, "Herman, what's this? What's wrong?" He stood between me and Mr. C. Herman E. Calloway said, "I told you about this boy from the word go. He's been snooping through things in the house that he's got no business in. He stole these." I said, "No, sir, I did not." Mr. C said, "Then where'd you get them? I'm not going to ask you again." He unsqueezed the rocks in his hand. I was surprised they hadn't turned into diamonds or dust the way he'd been holding them so tight. Mr. Jimmy took my two rocks from him. He looked at the writing and said, "Flint, Michigan, August 8th, 1911, and Gary, Indiana, July 13th, 1912. That's more than 25 years ago. He squatted down and looked right at me and said, "Son, where'd you find these? Just tell the truth." I kept one eye on Mr. C. He still looked like he was getting ready to jump funny on me. I said, "Mr. Jimmy, I didn't find them or steal them from nowhere. They've always been mine. I got them from my mama, and that's the swear-for-God truth. Now, could I please have my rocks back, sir?" I stuck my hand out. Both Mr. Jimmy and Herman E. Calloway said, "Your mama?" "Yes, sir." I kept my hand out. Mr. Jimmy said, "Bud, where did your mother get these?" I said, "I don't know, sir. She always had them." Mr. Jimmy and Herman E. Calloway were looking at me with that can't decide which hand to smack you with look when Mr. Jimmy said, "Bud, what did you say your mama's name was?" "No one ever asked me, sir." Herman E. Calloway was still hot. "You throw a lot of sirs around, but you've still got a real strong, real smart mouth, disrespectful streak in you, boy. Now you answer the question or I'll..." I screamed at him, "Angela, sir." I was so mad that I hadn't meant to say sir, but it came out anyway. "Her name is Angela Janet Caldwell." Mr. Jimmy said, "Lord have mercy." Herman E. Calloway's pipe dropped out of his mouth, and he stumbled and fumbled into Grand Calloway Station, feeling the way like he'd been struck blind. Then I knew. Herman E. Calloway was the best liar in the world. He'd been lying to me and everybody else all along. Now there was some real good proof against him. He was all shook up. I said to Mr. Jimmy, "I knew it. I knew he was my father." Mr. Jimmy was still crouched down in front of me, and he said, "Bud, he's not your father." "Yes, sir, he is. That's why he ran off like that. He got caught lying after all these years." Mr. Jimmy said, "Bud, that's enough. Herman is not your father, but Angela Janet is his daughter's name. If what you're saying is true, Lord help us all, it looks like Herman might be your grandfather." This was real surprising. But the thing I felt most was glad that Herman E. Calloway wasn't my dad. Shucks, who'd want a daddy that on top of being so old and so doggone mean, had such a big belly? Not me.